Inside Lacrosse Podcast, the source of the sport.
What up, Prep Nation? Did I do that right?
Perfect.
I'm Terry Foy. He's Dan Kaplan. He's holding a baby, so I am hosting. We are talking about the end of the 2024 high school lacrosse season and the beginning of the 2024 summer recruiting season. Dan Kaplan, first and most important question as we get this podcast underway, how would you characterize your base tan?
Base tan, I'm in really, really good shape. I'd say I'm pretty much one of the people that doesn't have to worry too much about sunscreen to begin with. And on top of that, I've already gotten a nice DE Turf crisp tan from Platinum Cup. So I'd say the base tan is in good shape. Very good question.
We are recording this at 3:30 on Thursday afternoon, June 13th. It's a little disingenuous to call it a preview because we're about a week in, and you mentioned it. We got things kicked off last weekend with McAneer heading out to Adrenaline Blackheart. I hit up Platinum Cup on Saturday afternoon. You went there on Sunday and saw all the championship action unfold. And then from there, I hopped a flight to St. George's School in Newport, Rhode Island, where ML8 was hosting the Summer High School National Championship, kind of an NHSLS, 14 teams, 14 teams, 13 of them from New England, and kind of that first opportunity to get a look at squads, mostly without their 24s, as well as with their newcomers who are joining the action. So with that being said, we are poised for a very busy week ahead. And after we run through a little bit of that, we're going to turn it over to your interviews with Detroit Country Day head coach Chris Garland, whose team won the Michigan State Championship. And then you are going to finish up with an interview with Urbana head coach Kevin Donahue.
Gavin Donahue.
You were Gavin right. Donahue. I misheard it. I apologize, Gavin. And and that'll be it for this edition of the IL Preps podcast. So to get things kicked off, what do you love about summer recruiting?
Gosh, this is such an interesting time of the year, especially you have a couple of state championships kind of wrapping up, but everybody's kind of shifting into that club atmosphere. And I think it's just you can kind of sense the, like, excitement from the guys. You know, they know that, like, so much of their future not depends on but is kind of leaning on, is associated with the lacrosse that they're about to play. And I think especially for me being the first summer going through it in this role, I think that's one element that, like, I wasn't expecting to feel so much, but is just absolutely, like, you could feel it, especially at Best in Class, where there's so many guys that, you know, are probably some 9-1 guys and all that type of stuff. So it was, I'd say, just the excitement of the guys in this stage.
Yeah, it's incredible. I was so self-focused. I didn't mention that we were, you were specifically, but Inside Lacrosse was at Best in Class on Tuesday and Wednesday as well, getting things rolling on the individual event showcase side of things. So coming up this weekend, I am going to be at the Primetime Summer Invitational on Saturday and Grade 8 on Sunday. Dan Averin is going to be the opposite. Do you have any weekend plans ahead?
So I am going to do a little swing. I think I'm going to try and hit the Millen Showcase. But this will be one of the more free weekends leading into a really busy rest of June. And Showtime is the next thing that is 100% set in stone on my schedule, though.
For sure. And in addition to that, we're going to see state champions crowned in Massachusetts Public High School, the MIAA, as well as in Pennsylvania, the PIAA. IL Preps will be on site for, at the very least, the Massachusetts Division I Championship, and we'll have a report out of the Division III Championship as well, where Scituate, led by Willie Robinson, if you're unfamiliar with this story, it's absolutely incredible. His father died suddenly last week, either the day or 2 days following that tragic event. He went out and, I believe, scored 6 goals in a quarterfinal win, and then in the state semifinals, I believe, scored either 5 or 6 goals, including the overtime game winner, and on Tuesday, sending his team to the state championship. That performance earned Scott Van Pelt Best Thing I Saw Today on his nighttime sports center, an incredible story. And then in Pennsylvania, we have a familiar state championship as LaSalle takes on Radnor in the biggest class showdown. And then in New Jersey, we've got the Kearse Cup being held for, I believe, the second time, as it is the successor to the Tournament of Champions. So on top of all that, make sure to check out InsideTheCross.com, where there is a ton of content coming away from the New York State Championships last weekend, where Dan Abram was on site at the boys' games. Riley Kennedy was on site at the girls' games, and Abram came away with some tremendous highlights, specifically of Southside's shocking overtime win over Victor and McQuaid Jesuits' Class A win over Farmingdale. Incredible stuff to check out, and there's more to come coming away from that as well. And then, as mentioned, we've got content up from Black Card and Platinum Cup. You're going to be putting together write-ups on Best in Class. I'll be putting together write-ups from National High School Summer Championship. Dan, anything to add before we turn this over to your interview with Coach Garland?
So first of all, those interviews are both incredible. Two really, really impressive seasons, but in very opposite ways. Urbana 20-0, never gives up double digits the entire season. And then Detroit Country Day with Coach Garland, they've just been through the ringer a little bit more. And, you know, Urbana has been kind of knocking on the door. They had a couple seasons where they were, you know, really high wins, 19, 18, 19 wins, one loss, two losses on the season. So two kind of opposite perspectives, but they're both really interesting listens. And then Coach Garland and I go way back, so there's some extra nuance in that one that I think listeners will just really enjoy. Everything from talking about Martin Luther King to recruiting rankings to a whole ton more.
Excellent. Well, we're going to be doing this periodically, hopefully as often as possible, maybe even every week, if we can find it in our schedules to talk about IL preps and the summer recruiting circuit. But at the very least, we'll be back before the dead period or during the dead period, and then that'll set us up for the conversation about what is to be held in store for July. But with all that being said, check out and take it away, Coach Garland.
The first of the bunch here is Coach Chris Garland of Detroit Country Day School in Michigan, and they just conquered Michigan Region 2. Coach, how you doing?
Doing great. It was awesome to win a state championship at the University of Michigan. Really proud of our kids. It feels like it was a week ago, but it was just on Saturday, and we had our banquet last night to celebrate the kids and the seniors with the families. It was just a really special weekend, one that none of us will forget.
Absolutely. And further than that weekend, I'm sure it was a season that a lot of these guys will have, you know, deep in their memory for a long, long time. But obviously state championships are delivered on one day through one course of 2 hours, but made over the course of a season or multiple seasons, years even in some cases. Can you talk a little bit about your original decision to head to Michigan when you took over there and just kind of the process that it's been from day one kind of through to where we are right now?
That's a really good question, and I'll give you the really condensed version of the story. So I was really lucky. I had worked with the Cherries for a long time. Most people know that about me, and as a result of that experience, I had met some people who had asked me if I'd be interested in taking a look at the job at Country Day. My wife and I went out there to interview, and I think this is a great place to tell the story. I would say it really didn't go well. I wasn't sure if they wanted me to work there based on how the interview went. And I got back home, and my wife and I decided, even on the plane, that, hey, it was great. Happy to go out and visit. Really enjoyed the time getting to know some people there. But I told the former headmaster, Glenn Schilling, that we were going to really pass on the opportunity. And Mr. Schilling had stopped me in my tracks, and he said, Chris, there isn't going to be a next year for this opportunity. And I said, well, you've got to convince my wife that this is the right thing. And needless to say, she was not really happy with the fact we were continuing on the conversation. I was actually walking, I think, from my house in Towson to an IL event, to be honest with you, Dan. And my wife was really upset with me. And I said, you got to talk to this gentleman. He really thinks we'd be a good fit out there. And he did. And Mr. Schilling, a tremendous person, leader of our school, made it happen for our family. And the first year we were there, and this is a story I've told to the program many times, you know, we had 26 kids, and six of those guys, you know, struggled passing and catching. And we had a pretty young, good group of kids who were skilled and played outside of school. Ryan Linklit, who's at Michigan, Sam Erjavec, who's now at Babson, Owen Bergen ended up playing football at Northwestern, Jack Freeman, our goalie, Dom Sarafa, Joe Miller, who committed to High Point, was there for a year, returned back home. And Henry Metz, who was at our school, went to Salisbury, is now the face-off athlete at Virginia. Amazing story about Henry. His freshman year, I met him. He didn't want to play lacrosse. He was a really serious hockey player. I begged him and begged him and begged him to play. He's like, all right, Coach Grant, I'm going to play. Gets really good, you know, leaves our school. His family had sent their siblings to Salisbury. Ends up committing to play at Virginia, so I'm glad I stayed on him. But I'm really happy that those guys at Salisbury turned him into the player he is. Because I played a part in it, but those guys did most of the legwork, and Henry worked really hard. And then year two, Dan, we had turned the corner. Momentum was great. Kids were really positive, and we made some strides in that first year. And then COVID. And then all of a sudden, we didn't have a season. And then 21, I think a transformative figure in the program came to Country Day, Parker, a year ago. And I give him a lot of the credit. He was such a special person, is such a special person. And people thank me a lot for what's happened at Country Day. I thank Parker. His leadership, determination, and just grit helped us overcome some obstacles. And then Luke Grove, who's at Albany, and then Ryan Linklip had a great junior year. So 21, we made it to the semifinals, lost in overtime. And 22 and 23, we made it to the finals. And 24, we won it. So there's so many people to thank, but those kids and their families who always believed in the staff deserve much, if not much, of the credit.
That was an extremely detailed answer that, you know, I feel like I went through it with you. And you mentioned the hard work, and, you know, especially with Henry and what he went through at Salisbury. In my opinion, like, from your experience and just with Michigan and Juice Cherry specifically coming out and doing so many of those IL events, like, you kind of firsthand got to see so much of that, like, evolution that was, like, you know, they always had these really short numbers, but they came out and just, like, scrapped, and they played really hard, and they got better, and they were humble, and they took to the coaching. And I feel like that's kind of a similar story there with, you know, Detroit Country Day. And I guess my question is, like, when you get your hands on these guys and they're so, like, hardworking and humble and, like, coachable, like, how much of a pleasure is it to be able to get with those guys and coach them over the course of their careers?
At Country Day, it's been a pleasure, and one of the things I'm really proud of, and we tell kids all the time, you get a year in the system, and then as a sophomore, you have to make a significant contribution. And this year, we were lucky. We had more depth than most people, save for CC, and they won the D1 state championship. But it just worked out in our favor. But now we've got some guys with experience, and we have a little depth, and we've got guys who want to play college lacrosse who will eventually end up playing college lacrosse. But we've had to practice in a way to get people better really quickly. And I've spent a lot of time talking to my friend Brandon Childs. I talk to a lot, one of my closest friends in the sport, asking him about coaching, how we can get better, how I can get better. He's helped me a lot over the course of many years. Going to IMLCA, the convention, has helped me over the course of my coaching career. And I've been really lucky to work with some of the best people in our sport, some really great coaches. Mark Millen, Austin Stewart, Brooks Matthews, Kevin Giblin many years ago, Mike Kubik at Georgetown Prep many years ago, John Dugan at Prep years ago. And they've really helped me along this path. And those guys deserve a lot of the credit. I would say, too, from my days in Baltimore, I mean, three guys in particular who had a profound impact on me, J.J. Pearl, whom I will never forget, Rusty Ward, Gary Mitchell, and obviously my really great friend who passed away tragically several years ago, Brent Johnson. Those people had an indelible impact on me as a coach in person, but made me a better coach. But tactically, the stuff I had to learn, speaking to people about the game and how to get better, has helped our program.
Absolutely. And let's talk for a second about Brent, if you don't mind. I knew him from a distance, but obviously knew that he was around so much of lacrosse for years and years and years. You say you have a really good relationship. What was he like, and you know, how would you like to honor him?
A truly remarkable person, transformative coach. Everybody should aspire to be like Brent when they work with young people. He knew what his strengths were, and that was working with kids and families. Anyone who came within, you know, striking distance of Brent loved him. And he and I became really close. And he's dearly missed and someone I think about a lot. I went to his aviarian school. I knew he was very involved at Mount St. Joe. Had coached the JV team there for many years. And I remember they honored him and his family after his passing. And it was really touching because he had made such a difference in people's lives and worked so hard to develop programs, the Breakers 91. And he started there and helped those teams and coached so many kids and changed so many people's lives. To really honor Brent is to be a positive coach, something all of us have to work on. But it came so naturally to him because he loved people and he loved kids. And he was the person who always did it for the right reasons, always did things for the right reasons.
And speaking of doing things for the right reasons, I think you're one of those people as well. And anybody that's kind of had the pleasure of, you know, being your friend through this process or even just being an opponent of yours has seen the kind of passion and energy that you bring to the table day in and day out, especially, you know, those long, hot summers. Where does that come from? And, you know, where do you, you know, why do you live your life that way?
That's a good question. When I first started doing this, you know, I remember in Charlottesville, I was coaching in the youth league and just really back when rec lacrosse was really popular. And I got connected with Coach Starja, Coach Van at Virginia and worked their camps. I would work Dom's camp at Graves Mountain Lodge, shower on day three, half day, go into work that day, you take some time off. I worked his camps for many years. And I think working with him and Coach Van and at other camps, especially Coach Tambroni's camp, he's been such a powerful person in my life, someone I could always rely on to talk to about anything, absent recruiting, just working, going to Army's and Navy's camps and meeting those people who changed my life and helped me get into the sport and showing people you've got some tactical knowledge but willing to put in the time, energy, and effort to work with kids. I mean, that goes a long way with people in our sport. But I just love being out there. I'm the happiest when I'm on the field coaching, whether it's sun up to sundown. And I remember I used to coach in the summertime. I would go from Breakers, FCA, Cherries. I did that one summer, three club teams in one summer. I don't know why I did it, but I loved doing it. And it was really special to me to be able to do that with so many kids. And hopefully they remember those times. They were positive. A lot of them are older now and done with school. But I just enjoy it immensely.
I know it. I know they have it, those memories deep in there. And, you know, there's a lot of their peers had coaches that maybe didn't give that to them. So I know that they're thankful for it. But let's kind of shift into this team specifically. And while obviously championships are a team honor, there's some individuals I'd like to dive in on and get kind of your feel for both their game and just their impact through the season. The very first one, you know, D3 guys here. So an obvious start. Amherst LSM this year was the LSM of the year, first team All-American. You have an LSM headed to Amherst. What can you tell D3 Nation and IL Preps World about, and excuse me, please correct my pronunciation if I screw it up, but Shafiq Halabi, who is headed to Amherst. What can you tell us about him and his game?
You got it right, Shafiq Halabi. He played close defense for us. And he was remarkable. And I think about his journey, and he made mention of this last night at our banquet. If you would have told me Shafiq Halabi was going to be a two-time first-team All-State, potentially an All-American, the voting hasn't been certified just yet, he would have been surprised. One, no one's going to work harder than Shafiq. He's also incredibly bright. He was an academic All-American, will be a two-time academic All-American, two-time captain, a natural leader, and a tremendous role model. Shafiq always is so grateful to me for what I've done. I'm just grateful to him for his hard work. He set the stage for other kids to fill his role when he's gone in terms of leadership and performance. But on ball, just tactically, right, Shafiq, his footwork's incredible. His stick work's very good. He puts pressure on people's hands, and he collapses well on the crease, But I would argue his understanding of the game and ability to communicate responsibilities to people is unparalleled. He is a Division I communicator, and a lot of the Division I schools liked him this past summer, but Amherst was the correct fit. And got to thank Coach Woods for taking a real hard look at him. And anecdotally, right, Coach Woods was at Crab Feast. I saw him. I said, I think I've got a guy for you. And he said to me, listen, I'm full on D. I don't have any spots, Chris, but if something breaks, you're the first person I'm going to call. Call me on Wednesday of next week. So I call him on Wednesday, first thing in the morning. He's like, I love Shafiq. We've got a spot. Let's move forward. So I really appreciate Coach Woods, whom I've known for a really long time. And it just speaks to our game, where he was at Colorado College, and I knew him then pretty well. We always stayed in touch. And that matters. And I think relationships in our game matter a great deal, especially if you make recommendations to coaches and those kids pan out. They're going to keep going back to the well, metaphorically, and I'm glad that worked out for Shafiq and Amherst, and I think he's going to help them sooner rather than later because of his commitment to the game. And he's done well with Midwest kids. You remember Krumenacher?
Absolutely.
I mean, we played him my first year, and after the game I said to him, who are you, number one? Two, you're going to be awesome at Amherst. He had a tremendous career there, tremendous career.
Yeah, he was excellent. He was on the Spartans' radar back in my offensive coordinator days too. So we were upset to see him head north, but understand that, and this is to steal a line directly from you, it's about your fit, right? Not
yep.
A prize to be won, a fit to be made, not a prize to be won.
Got it.
Which I guess, like, I can't resist the offset. I want to keep focused on your guys, but I'd be remiss not to talk to you about that. You are the person that, in my eyes, preaches that the most. What does it mean, and why do you feel so strongly?
I really appreciate you asking that question, and I think so many kids get caught up in showcases, and they get caught up in rankings. They get caught up in the things, not necessarily that are wrong, but that's what's in front of them, and it's low-hanging fruit. And if I think of my own experience as an 18-year-old going to Hampton, Sydney, had you told me when I was 18 I would go to Southside, Virginia, to an all-male school, I would have laughed at you. But I had the unique privilege of playing for one of the great people in our sport, Coach Rostand. And it was a great fit for me and my family. I was really lucky to have the opportunity to play for him shortly, but he's a tremendous person and an awesome role model. So in terms of fit, and I tell this to kids all the time, I've lived my life. I am 46 years of age. I'm not going to college. I may be in graduate school. I've gone to school, but this is your journey, and you have to figure out what's important to you. And lacrosse is why we're having this conversation. We're not going to deny that fact, but in terms of academic, is it a good fit for you? Are you a strong candidate for admission? Number two, do you have a sense of what you want to do with your life? And that's the harder part with young people, especially juniors in high school. But I also tell them, if your parents are going to invest money for you to go to college, you start to have to get a sense of what matters to you as a student. What are the things you get lost in school, whether it be in history or in chemistry, whatever? What are your interests? What are the things you really enjoy about going to school each day? In terms of just, you know, alumni connections, you're going to college either to go to graduate school or get a job. Are they going to help you do that? And cost, Dan, I don't think people take that into consideration now. They're thinking about it more because college is more expensive. And there are definitely places that can make it worth your while financially. You put those things in a hopper, and then we start to build in how lacrosse fits in your life. And then we dig a little bit deeper into the coaching staff, the culture of the program, their success, whether you want to play or not, whether you're willing to bide your time and work really hard, knowing that you have to work hard regardless of where you go to school. But we want kids to really think about all the factors that go into this decision, which is an important one, so they don't end up leaving or being dissatisfied. Now, granted, kids change their minds, and they can mature and transfer, and the portal's a different conversation. But we just want people to really come to the table doing their homework, as opposed to, well, you know what, I want to play at insert ACC school here. Well, lots of people want to play there, and those guys will decide whether or not you can. But for those people who aren't going to play at those schools, we've got to do some of our homework here, a lot of our homework, and find the right fit. And college is a match to be made and not a prize to be won. And it's your journey and not an adult's journey. Granted, we're here to help you along the way, but we ultimately want to help you find the best fit so you can be happy and healthy as a young person and have a positive experience.
Love it. And like you mentioned, like the ratings and rankings and like IL preps, we have that responsibility as well. And, you know, it serves fans in a way, but it totally can lead to these, you know, unintended consequences with mental health, with players in terms of just like expectations, right? Even if it's not less of like a, you know, severe situation and more of just, you know, I was expecting this based on that and now that didn't happen, or opposite, you know, and it's kind of becomes a situation where if a family or a player doesn't feel like they're getting the love from IL, they think it's hurting their circumstances or hurting their resume. And that's part of why I wanted to ask you that question is, like, I also think that as much as, like, we have that responsibility and, you know, that's a part of our identity, it also has to become more of a part of our identity to be informative on everything that you just said. So I appreciate you saying that in a better way than I ever possibly could.
You know, I think those rankings are interesting. I like looking at them. I like watching the good kids. But I think parents and kids need to know, you hit the reset button day one when you step on a college campus. Your teammates do not care what club team you play for. They don't care about your ranking. They don't care about your highlight film. Are you going to help that team win one more game? Are you going to help that team in the weight room? Are you going to help them in the locker room? Are they going to, you're going to help them off the field? And if you can't do those things, your ranking doesn't matter to them. Your club team doesn't matter. Your high school national championship, state championship, those things do not matter to those guys. And they're older, and they've been through the meat grinder. They've sacrificed. And, you know, for me, the sad thing is when you see kids, especially young adults or young men, when they lose, they put their heart and soul into a college lacrosse season. I don't know if high school kids realize how difficult that is. You've invested everything into this. The weight training, the diets, the studying, and to lose is really difficult, but the relationship you build with those guys are really important. So I understand on the one side, hey, I want to be recognized, but on the other side, you should want to be recognized for doing the right things. And Brandon Childs and I, I've sent this to him many times, and it's a speech by MLK, one of my favorite speeches. It's called The Drum Major Instinct. I think everybody should listen to it solely because of the message he delivers in it. Because he says, everybody wants to be out front. Everybody wants to be the drum major. Everybody has this instinct to get ahead, to be recognized, to be loved. And he says, that's natural. But the real thing you want to strive for is to serve other people. That should be what motivates you. And we've had this conversation as a team. How do I serve other people and fight that instinct to be out front and be recognized? I would suggest listening to it. It's really powerful.
I absolutely will. I'll put it on the list. And for anybody who's listening at this point and still doesn't realize that I played for Brandon Childs, who Coach Garland continues to reference. So I, you know, take a lot of that same stuff away from him. And when you went and mentioned MLK, when you went that direction, I was thinking street sweeper because we have that talk with our team every year. And so it's one of the things that he references constantly and is one that I definitely relate to as a result.
He's a great man. I'm really happy he's a friend of mine.
Absolutely. All right, and let's shift to somebody that he's going to have the privilege of playing against, another D3 guy, and then we'll shift and we'll hit a couple of these D1 guys. That's Caden Daly, an attackman headed to RIT. How impactful was he for you guys this season?
Caden finished his career as the all-time leading goal scorer in the history of Country Day. I believe over 200 goals in 4 years. In the semifinals, he had 7 goals. And he spurned us to victory, and he won the Athletic Cup, the highest award for a male athlete at Country Day. He was a captain on the football and hockey teams. He had a profound impact on Country Day as a scorer. Interestingly enough, he started off his career as a defenseman, became a midfielder, then attack. The potential exists for him to play probably midfield in college, and he'll be an absolute terror. But I would say his semifinal performance will go down for me as one of my memories of him as a player, and we needed it. And I tell the kids, and they feel this way too, the semis in Michigan, I think it's the most difficult game. Our kids have exams. They're thinking about all sorts of things, thinking about getting to the last game. And then, okay, if we win, I got to go home. I got to study. I got to take my exam at 10:30 tomorrow, and then our school year is over. Or even for some kids who were taking AP exams, they pushed both to Friday, and then they got to study for 2 very difficult exams and get through the game. But Cade's performance on that day was so great. He played so hard. But I would say, Dan, and I challenged him, and I challenge my team all the time. They know that. And I said to the attack in the locker room at Michigan on Saturday, I'll know in the first minute or so whether or not we want to win this game. It'll be on the ride. If we cause havoc on the ride, we're going to win. And I think it was a turnover, loose ball, or a shot save. Doesn't really matter. Caden and Kiki Yerogo rode a guy, and it's like we got the ball back, scored a goal. I said, we're going to win this game. We're going to win today, and I think we're going to win pretty easily based on the effort they put in. And they rose to the challenge. And we have a young man, a brilliant kid in our team. McEwen and he have been in contact. He does the statistics for our team. Oh. Caden, and I told Jake Kuhn this, he was the fifth highest rated defensive player because of the number of turnovers he created in the riding game. Caused turnovers, ground balls on our end, and that's pretty impressive for an attackman to be one of your best defensive players.
All right, that is incredible. I didn't realize that Patrick failed to relay that message to me. So what can you dive in on that a little bit? Who is it and what is he doing?
Oh, the stats kit? The young man? Amazing. So he approached me last year and asked if he could just do the data for our team, data analytics. It's his bailiwick. So I connected him with Patrick, but he sort of created his own algorithm. He had his science for a project about data analytics, and it's really guided the way we run our practices and how we assess players. And ultimately, Dan, when people ask you, hey, why, Coach Kaplan, why am I not playing more? And you've got to sort of figure out, well, why isn't this young man playing more? Well, let me look at the data here. Let me take a look and give you some really feedback on your play, on the offensive and defensive ends, and how you become more efficient. It's a better way to have a conversation with a young man about what he needs to do to improve. I always felt it was trite to tell someone, well, go work on your non-dominant hand, or you need to shoot, go shoot the ball, or go throw the ball against the wall. It's like, well, hold on for a second. Here, you need to more generate more shots on your natural side. You shoot at a higher efficiency in these spots. You've turned the ball over in our end at these times under duress. We need to work on this. So giving kids more specific feedback with data helps them improve, and it helps us figure out who are the guys we should play more.
Wow, and so that's based on all practice film, or he's breaking down solely game film?
He does the game film using huddle statistics.
Yep, got it. Cool, very cool. All right, so like I said, I knew we were going to shift into some of the potentially higher caliber recruits here in a second, and one way that I like to describe it is like if I were to Madden rate your team, I think the player that would come in with the highest Madden rating is Andrew Gravinzia.
Grazinia.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about his game? I know that obviously like what pops to me when I've seen him is just like his stick skills and ability off the ground to just be first time through anything in traffic and to put it on the ground in general as well.
He has phenomenal hands. He doesn't miss many passes. And off the ground, he's tremendous. He's got what we call, I guess, a sticky stick. Anytime it's in his vicinity, he's going to pick it up and clear it. He's great dodging. His skills are really, really good. He has the skills of a midfielder. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but close to 100 ground balls and a lot of caused turnovers. And we had struggled in the early part of the year at the stripe. He took a lot of face-offs. And a young man I think people will be very familiar with soon at the Division I level, an opponent of ours, Landon Parker, who's going to Monmouth, probably one of the best face-off athletes we've seen in the state of Michigan. We put Andrew out there against him, and it helped us win the game. Grand Ledge, his high school, also have Tyson Cooper, who I think is going to be a phenomenal player at the University of Michigan, outstanding player. We kept the ball out of his hands, and he had 8 goals against us, or 6 or 7. But if we didn't have Grazinia facing off against Landon Parker, who is outstanding, I don't know if we would have won that game. And so he mitigated that threat of Landon's performance. So Andrew can do it all. He is a truly special player, an excellent student. I think Notre Dame is going to be very pleased with what they have coming in a few years.
Absolutely. And then in goal, probably wouldn't have been too far behind him on those Madden ratings, like I said, and that's Kellen Kirby, another 2025. He's headed to Ohio State, so not going too far. What would you like to say about his game and his impact?
I'm always careful, especially with young people, about telling them how good they are or their potential. But I've been in touch with Coach Vossler, Coach Myers, Coach Crane, whom I've known for a very long time, and I said, I think he's one of the best goalies in the country. And they agreed. Coach Vossler said, we think he's outstanding. He has played so well this year. Goals allowed, I know it's a misleading statistic, fewer than 6 goals per game. in the final game. He only had 7 saves. They didn't see many shots. But I think his performance is also reflective of the defense. And at the All-American meeting, our last meeting of the year, the coaches said it's deflating to play against him for teams and players. It's deflating. And he makes saves that should be goals. He's going to do that this summer. And one more year, I think he's going to make even greater strides. And I coached Crandall Quinn, and I thought he was outstanding. He was one of my favorite players to coach. He's at University of Michigan. And last year at the last game, I said, he's the heir apparent to Crandall. And those two have been incredible people to watch perform and develop over the course of several years. And I think Kirby has the chance to maybe eclipse Crandall. Crandall won't like me saying that. Don't say this to him. But I think Kirby has played so well. I'm so proud of him for all the work he's put in. And this is a kid, Dan, who commutes from Dexter, Michigan. It's an hour drive every morning for 3 years. But his folks had said to me, and it meant a lot to me, that it was worth it, that the sacrifices they've made for their son to go to Country Day have been worth it for them and him, and because he's become a great player, a better person, and a leader in our program. He just does so many things well. But doorstop saves, he takes up a lot of the cage, and 12 yards, it's just not going in unless you rip that thing. And if he's obstructed, but inside he's even more deadly. And he's a vocal leader, fiery. Some of that's got to, when he gets to the college level, he's got to know how to play within his team defense and direct guys. But he's had really good defenders in front of him for several years. Ryan Linklip, Grazini, Shavik Alabi, some other kids. Jack Zelansky is going to UDM. So I think you put those two together, great defenders and Kellen Kirby, it's a really good mix here. And Kellen's been really great for us.
And the last guy that I'll hit on here, hopefully was the first guy off the bus, and that's Joe Norton coming in at a 6'5", probably 210 now, putting on weight still.
About 210. He's a big – he can move.
And like I said, hopefully he was your first off the bus. We had him this fall at IDX, and he's a guy that, you know, just frankly, like, as you approach the field, it doesn't take long to find him. What was his game and impact for you this season?
So – I look at the numbers a lot. Joe's assist-to-turnover ratio was remarkable. In one game, on our first game against EGR, one of our rivals, I think he had 5 or 6 assists. His numbers weren't gaudy, but he's the party starter for us. He does everything for Country Day Lacrosse. He's on the wing. He'll play defense. He clears the ball. And one of my opponents said, you throw it to Joe Norton in the clear, you're just not getting the ball from him. He's big, he's fast, he moves very well. But beyond sort of his physical attributes, there's an understanding of the game, and he's got nuance. And interestingly enough, years ago, Joe was told, you got to move to defense. You're not a midfielder. You're not an offensive player. You'll never play offense at the Division I level. And Joe's like, no, that's what I'm going to do. I want to play offense. And he has proven to be a really important part of our program and team. And expectations are going to increase for him. But I just think Joe's a student of the game. He works closely with one of the best minds in the game, Jamie Monroe, someone I really, really like talking to about lacrosse. And you put those guys together, Joe, whose desire and work ethic, Jamie is understanding the game, and Jamie working with me and answering my questions and taking my phone calls. He does it all the time and helping me help Joe and help guys on our team. And I really appreciate that about our sport. A guy like that helps get on my team and help me and my staff get a little bit better. And I don't have all the answers, and no coach does. And the willingness to reach out to people who know a lot can help your team, and it's helped Joe. And I think he's going in such a positive direction as a player. I think this summer he plays for the West Coast Stars. He's going to do very, very well. And, again, I think relative to the people in the 25 class, Joe has got to be up there, and he's going to have an outstanding senior year for us. And he's got to. We lose a lot, and Joe's numbers have to improve. And I think he's going to finish his career as one of the finest midfielders at Country Day.
Awesome. And I said that he was the last guy I'd specifically hit on. That was kind of a lie, because I'll have two here, and then I have one more final question for you on the backside of that. But
sure.
I do want to hit on your 2026s. You mentioned Keaton a year ago. I know you have Mason Gall there and Preston Cook as well. It's obviously a big summer for those 2026s. What would you say to those guys as they approach this this span, and what, from, you know, like, coach's perspective, can they expect to see from those guys?
I told those guys, you have an opportunity. they play for a great club team. They're going to really competitive events, and I want them to be so successful. And I said to Keaton, you've got to play really hard, and there are lots of good attackmen in the 26 class. I think it's pretty deep there, to be honest with you. And the difference between good players and great players at the summer is riding. Lots of guys can beat their man and score. Lots of guys have range in their shot. But that guy is looking for the kid who's going to really create havoc for them and create turnovers. Look at the Cavanaughs. And you watch them play. They ride so hard. They get the ball back. And every coach knows, man, to turn the ball over in a clear is just awful. It just puts a knot in your stomach because it's coming back your way. It's a fast break or slow break. And your wrong personnel is on, and they're going to go at them. So that's going to be really important. For Mason and Preston and Bonner Upshaw, one more young man, two of those guys are midfield. Mason, incredibly skilled left-handed player, probably the most skilled player in the program at Country Day. Incredible hands, box player, and he does a lot of really nice things on his natural side, gets underneath and can finish with the best of them. And Preston was really impressive in the final game. Gets under, can shoot the ball with velocity, tremendous first step. I mean, his jab step to get back to his natural side is outstanding, and he can stretch the defense. And Bonner, I'm very cautious about comparing anyone to this young man who played so well at the college level, but his frame reminds me of the light kid at Notre Dame. 6'5", great footwork, but Bonner's hands are incredible. He's a hockey player. So he's got great hands and a tremendous athletic lineage. His grandfather played football at U of M, played professional baseball. His father played professional basketball overseas. And Bonner, I think he's probably a good basketball player too. He stopped playing because he's a hockey goalie at Country Day. I think he's going to get some people excited about what he can do. But again, cautious about comparing anyone to such a great player, but he reminds me a lot of him. And with more development, strength training, I think he could get really close to being a special player. But we have a good group of 26s, really looking forward to seeing what those guys do this summer, and so happy that they had a really great sophomore year. And hopefully that rolls into having success at their competitive schedule.
Awesome. And like I said, I have one final question here. And, you know, like I said, from my perspective, I only kind of get the top of the top, a little bit of a zoomed out version of your team through the year, and would certainly only see anything that would happen on game day. Winning a championship has a lot more to do with the, you know, however many game days you guys had throughout the year. Who are some guys that maybe somebody in my position would never really get to recognize or see that you'd like to, give some attention to, that maybe did some things behind the scenes to help get everybody to, you know, experience the success that they did this season?
Well, one guy, and I was speaking to Merrick Thompson and Albany about him, Trevor Corliss. He is going to make a contribution at Albany right away because of his athleticism. He's probably the fastest guy on the team, 6'3", another excellent hockey player. He was 2-time first-team All-State, the potential to be an All-American, and his development over the course of several years has been great to see and be a part of. And we had just this is one story I want to tell, and it's really indicative of the program. We had a young man come out 3 years ago. His name's John McCanney. And he's like, I want to play lacrosse. And we have a school. We have 330 boys. I don't say no to anybody. If you come out, you stick with it. You take the coaching. You stay for spring break and practice. You're in the team. That's it. We don't make cuts. I've never made cuts. And he started off as a defensive midfielder his first year. He was not a defensive midfielder. I'm like, this ain't working for us, brother. So he's like, oh, I'm going to take faceoffs. I'm like, great. Second year taking faceoffs. JV faceoff guy. Came back this year. I had him playing JV. This was a guy we swung up to varsity at the end of last year, started off JV. He didn't say anything, didn't complain at all. And then we brought a guy back, Joe Miller, worked with the faceoff guys. And gradually, we started to get a little bit better. And then in the last game, John McCanney, who just started playing lacrosse 3 years ago, 50% state championship game, 10 ground balls, helped win us the game. And for me, that is the story of our season. A young man who was great in the classroom, who put the time in, didn't complain, didn't blame anybody, fought his way back from the JV team, put his head down, put the work in, worked with our face-off athlete, face-off coach Joe Miller, worked with another face-off athlete, Steele Kierlook, got better every day, and he had a day when we needed him to have a day. And I'll never forget that moment as a coach. I could see John 20 years from now, and I'll say, you remember that day, June 8th, at U of M, and what you did? Yep, you got it, CG. Yeah, I'll never forget that when I see him. And I think that was a really special moment for all of us and John. And it was great. And I'll just watch that film on what he did, winning ground balls. And the story I think is really important. We told this at the banquet. I said to the Faceoff guys, I was getting on them. One day I was just really, I was upset. I said, you guys start picking up ground balls. I'm just done with you. Like, you're going to go, we'll figure it out. I'll find another solution. I was pretty frustrated that day. And someone had said to me after the game, you know, one day John was out there by himself, 20, 30 minutes, rolling it, picking it up, over and over and over again, all by himself. And he had Bonner up shit on the corner doing footwork on the ladders, and John was doing that. And that's it. Success is a lagging indicator, and it paid off for us. And he took the coaching. He took my criticism, which wasn't personal. It was just criticism. And he did it, and I'm really proud of him and proud of the team. And one more guy, you won't believe this. So last practice of the year, last segment of a drill, Hugh Aaron rolls his ankle, just writhing in pain. Trainer's like, he's not going tomorrow. He could try it, but he's not going. And he comes out the next day. We warm up. He's limping. We're like, he can't go. I'm like, I'm not playing him. I can't play him. Trainer gets there, double tapes his ankle over his shoe. And I'm like, okay, we got to go with him. We'll see what we can do. I wouldn't have known he rolled his ankle. Mm-hmm. And they went at him. He didn't get beat. And he plays for me. He's a true national player. And he does all the right things. And so proud of him for fighting through a really difficult injury on the last segment of a drill when we were just going to wrap up practice. And I thought, okay, that's problematic. One of our best defensive midfielders is out. But he fought through it. And that's another guy just to want to recognize him for all his efforts. And the last guy, you know, was one who's been really special. And you've been through this. You've been through coaching. You've been through difficult experiences with players. I wasn't his favorite guy. I was not. And it's fine for me to say that. You know, I wouldn't say I'm an acquired taste. But, I was not his favorite guy all the time. And his freshman year, he had a bad injury, and we told him to sit out, get it checked out. He wasn't happy about it. And he had to sit out. He was injured, and he realized that, and he had to get surgery. Sophomore year, it didn't play as much as he would have liked. But, again, and I've said this to the team, the hard work pays off in the end. And he's committed to UDM, and I think Country Day changed his life, and he's acknowledged that. And our school's a special place, and it worked out for him in the end. He played a major role in our run to the end. And, again, when you think about long-term what this game means, what this sport means to me and people like you, Terry, it's just this is what it's about. You get through some difficult things with folks, and when you get on the other side, you say, it was all worth it, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. It was, man. And I'm glad you were a part of my journey. And I've been through some tough things with people in this business, you know, in this sport. But they make you better, and you got to be grateful for all those experiences because they make you who you are as a person.
Absolutely. And it's, I mean, what everything you just described over the last 40 minutes or so, it's kind of just the beauty of team sports, right? Like, it's the beauty of lacrosse in general, but it's also the beauty of team sports, you know, like gathering with one collective group and everybody in their own individual way having to embrace the work, embrace their role as a collective to be able to continue on one path forward.
100%.
And that's the beauty of it, you know?
And it worked out for us. But I said this, or I posed this question to the team and family at the banquet. Would we feel differently if we didn't win? And the other one, can you really measure a team by wins and losses at our level? And I said, you can't do that because you have to measure the team by the development of the young men in your program over the course of 4 years and what they become. And I'm proud of what those kids became as a result of our time together. And we won, which was great. But that can't be the only indication of success for people working with young men. And the families feel that way. Now, granted, not everybody likes the decisions I make, and that's perfectly okay. And I'm still proud of what we did and proud of what the team overcame and what we've become over the course of my time as the coach.
Absolutely. All right, Coach, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. We really appreciate it here with IL Preps Nation.
Thank you. Obviously, I've known you so many years and consider you a friend of mine. Looking forward to seeing you this summer, hopefully, and Terry and McEwen, all the folks there. I've known you so long, and you've been so great to me for so long, going way back. We won with the Breakers, the first IL Invitational.
2015?
I think so. I want to look at the medal. I still have it. I remember.
At Goucher?
It was at Goucher. Because J.J. Pearl means so much to me, Rusty Ward, Gary Mitchell, and those memories with the Breakers, they were really special. I still have that medal in my drawer, and every time I'm putting my socks away, I'm like, man, those were the days with those guys. Those were special times with those guys. Yeah. I love them and miss those people immensely, and I miss Baltimore a lot. I always love going. It's my home. I always love going back. My wife's from Maryland. My life will take us back there at some point. But, I do remember those days, and they were special memories, ones I won't forget.
That 2015 at Goucher, I was still a junior, and I was still in playing. I would have just been working a table, doing stats, myself and Coach Hoffmeister.
Those were the days when they were recruiting rising ninth graders, brother. Yep. Those were wild times.
Yeah, yep. Certainly glad that we don't have that element going anymore. But yeah. I will let you get back to it and really appreciate all your time.
Thank you for the time. I appreciate it as well. Take care, Dan.
This call is being recorded.
All right. Thanks so much for taking the time here. We have Coach Gavin Donahue of Urbana after winning the Maryland 4A state championship. Coach, how are you?
Doing great today. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks so much for taking the time. I know you guys have a lot going on. Last week, you guys went right from winning the state championship to hosting Kid Camp, I saw. How was Kid Camp?
Camp's always great. It's great to get the community out and then just have the youth guys that, you know, they do ball boy stuff for us throughout the year. And, you know, we do some other clinics, but it's great to get the high school kids and some alumni come back to give back to the community, and we actually had like almost 100 kids out this time around, so which was our biggest attended one. So it's awesome to see it.
Yeah, that's great, and it really is one of the type of things that like those types of camps and those like grassroots efforts where it's, you know, in your community are really just integral to being able to spread the game and get sticks in hands in communities at a young age. So it's great to see those types of things happening. And like you said, the numbers probably are always a little better after a state championship, huh?
Yeah, of course.
So with that said, let's dive in on this team a little bit. And I guess just if you could give a little bit of a zoomed out perspective of maybe the season as a whole, rather than just diving in specifically to that state championship game, but you know, what were kind of your initial thoughts upon being able to reflect on the season that was 2024?
I mean, first of all, going into the season, you know, I knew we had some good talent coming back, but we did graduate our top three out of four of our top point scorers. So I would say this year going in, I thought we had potential to be talented, but we also had a lot of holes to fill. And just looking back at it now, the guys really worked hard in the off season, you know, in the weight room. My assistant coach actually is a personal trainer, so he works our off season conditioning, strength and conditioning program. And then I'm lucky enough to be a PE teacher in the building at Urbana. So we actually have a team sports lacrosse class, which really helps us out, you know, especially with our young kids, getting them ready to go for March. And then they just came together as a group like I've never coached before in terms of just their closeness and their ability to love each other on the field, off the field. And it almost reminded me of a college-esque team that they didn't care who was stepping on the field. You know, obviously everybody wants to play in big games, but they didn't really care about that stuff. They just had one goal in mind, and it was, you know, obviously to be a close-knit group, and number two is, you know, to win a state championship. And throughout the season, you just saw that happen. You know, early in the season, we, you know, this was probably the time I felt we could be pretty special, is we played in a tournament against Mount Hebron and Marriott's Ridge. And we played those guys back-to-back because the weather-related stuff. And, you know, we handled both of them pretty convincingly that day.
That was actually – you beat me to it, but that was going to be one of my questions legitimately right here written is, you know, like early in the season, when did you realize – that team was going to be, you know, special, and then kind of hint at that. And you mentioned that you won decisively. The score of those combined games was 23-5. So you guys more than won convincingly. That is pure domination against two of, you know, the better teams in Howard County. So, yeah, what I guess coming away from that weekend was kind of, you know, the vibe within the team.
I mean, I think that's the time that everyone believed that we can do something special, you know, players, coaches, everyone involved in the locker room. And we knew our potential. And from that point forward, that was the standard that we had to play at in practice, you know, and each of our games in order to, you know, achieve our goals, which, you know, after that, our schedule didn't get any easier, you know, playing against Kent Island, Towson, Cadenzville, you know, Ligonier two times. So we had to be ready, and they were up for the task pretty much all season long with, you know, a couple really tight games in there, which I think gave us the adversity we needed, you know, in Hereford and Towson when we found ourselves down in the third and fourth quarter, and they figured out a way to get out of that hole and, you know, win those games by a goal.
Absolutely, yeah, and both of those were one-goal games. And for anybody who's not familiar, the defensive side of the ball is the run that they had, you guys on that side of the ball, 20 games, not giving up double digits in that entire time, winning all 20 games, is just astounding. What do you attribute that defensive success to?
You know, I just think it is the guys buy in. You know, I'm the defensive coordinator. I've been a defensive coordinator since, you know, I took over there.
I didn't even realize that. So I'm glad to stroke that ego a little bit there for you.
No worries. But, I mean, we don't do anything fancy. You know, I keep it simple with these guys being high school kids and not putting too much on their plate. You know, we have a couple slide packages and stuff like that, but we just like try to fine tune what we do. And I think every team knows we're going to run a man to man and we're going to slide from the crease. If there's a crease guy, if it's an open, we're going to come adjacent. So I don't think there's any surprise in what we're going to come out in. And I just think we work on our on ball fundamentals every day and off ball, you know, and that's the one thing I preach to these guys is that we got to be great off ball defenders. If we want to be a great defense, knowing that we're off ball more than we are on ball. So in order to be a great defense, we got to be great off ball defenders. And that's what we've been really working on this year. And the kids really bought into it and they're just gritty kids. So they're a fun group to coach on that end of the field.
Yeah. It's always nice when you get a group of guys that's, you know, tough, gritty on that side that, you know, doesn't mind bending down and picking up ground balls and all that type of stuff. And, you know, one guy I think that I would describe maybe as the tip of the spear, I think, is Aiden Hines, who's headed to Delaware. What would you tell Blue Hens faithful, you know, to expect once Aiden gets on campus?
Just that he's a tremendous leader. He is a tremendous communicator. He's like having a coach on the field, to be honest with you, in terms of his IQ. Out of a high school kid, you know, and that's part of why we're so successful, because obviously it's important to see what a coach sees on the sideline. But me and Aiden, you know, in and out of timeouts, we communicate a lot just personally, because I see, hey, what are you seeing out there? Because I trust his IQ there. And that's how we make adjustments throughout the game. And I know he's going to Delaware, to a great place. You know, one of my good buddies I played high school with is a coach over there, so I'm happy he's headed over there.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool that he's going to go there.
And then another guy headed to, you know, maybe not quite as prestigious, but another great fit, and this is one thing that, you know, when it comes to talk about recruiting, so often it's about talking about, you know, the guys that hit, you know, they're fit and are in a good spot and not always about just the highest end guys. And that's Jack Byrne headed to Shenandoah. We actually at IL have seen him a couple times throughout the years and have been impressed. What did you feel like he brought to the table for that defense this year?
Just, again, his ability to take on different roles throughout the season and not worrying about one specific role. And he's a super unselfish kid who continues to get better at all aspects of the game. And he has really worked hard in the gym to become bigger, stronger, faster. And I think that has helped his development over the last couple of years. And I think he found a good fit going over to Shenandoah. And I think he could compete, you know, to get some good playing time rather quickly over there with his work ethic.
Absolutely. And another guy, one of the last kind of individual shout outs that I'll hit you with, but TJ Harn, obviously an incredible season. He's actually still uncommitted. So what would you say right now to a coach that maybe is thinking about, you know, reaching out or getting in contact about TJ and his game?
I mean, the first thing I would tell them is that he's one of the hardest workers that I've ever coached in terms of doing stuff on his own. I mean, he shows up on game day. We play at 7 o'clock, and he's there at 5 o'clock doing his wall ball routine and shooting before anyone ever gets in the locker room. So his work ethic goes unnoticed, and it has showed over the course of the last couple of years, but especially this year, it definitely paid off with his sleekness on the field, his ability to be a deceptive dodger. I think that was the biggest thing, like, to watch him get his guy to 5-by-5, low him asleep and inside roll him, like, numerous times, time after time, and even against our own guys in practice, like in Aiden Himes, like, you know, and sometimes he got him in practice as well, and he knew exactly what was coming. So, and he's got a super high IQ. He's a two-handed player, which, you know, these days is, you don't see it all the time anymore. And I think he can have a positive impact on a very high-level program wherever he, you know, ends up. And I think this summer he's going to get, you know, a lot more looks. And, you know, he's going to find a place where he's happy, I think, in the beginning of the fall here, which I'm pumped for him.
Absolutely good. And, you know, maybe on the surface level, you know, obviously we get to catch a bit here and there, but we don't get to watch all 20 games. So there's so many guys that, you know, throughout the course of the season are going to have an impact that maybe fly under our radar here at IL. Who are some guys that maybe throughout the season were doing a lot of what you said, you know, the gritty, the hard work that you'd like to, you know, give an opportunity to shout out here?
Yeah, I would say on the offensive side of the ball, one kid that really stepped up, and his whole career he has been a little injury prone, is Jacob Ward, our right-handed attackman. I think he finished with close to 70 points on the season. Just a heck of a time and room shooter, and one of the better finishers that have come out of the program since I've taken over. He's heading to Anderson University down in South Carolina. And then I think at the midfield, you know, is two seniors that I'd like to give a shout out is Elijah John-Jacques, who's an athletic midi going to Hampton University. And then Brady Roberton, who, he's going to Virginia Tech. I think he's going to, you know, do the whole club thing. But you know, he did all the little things in between the lines for us that you need a midfielder to do. You know, his stats are not glaring. I think he finished with like 20 points or something like that. But, you know, ground ball machine, riding, you know, created turnovers and stuff like that. So those three guys there. And then the last two guys on the defensive side is Aiden Casey. He's actually headed to Lynchburg to play. He played LSM for us, but I think he's going to go to Lynchburg. He got recruited as a short stick D-mid. Going to Lynchburg, which he's one of the toughest kids I know, and the biggest competitors. And then obviously our goalie Zach Thayer is a sophomore. He's an absolute stud. You know, he had a 71% save percentage this year, and we couldn't not let up 10 goals all season with the schedule we play without him between the pipes. So,
yeah, absolutely. And those are all great shout-outs. And I think the next part of that question evolves into, like, everybody you just mentioned is a guy that, like, is definitely going to have a game day impact. Maybe is there anybody on the team that, like, you know, was just a practice warrior that never really got the shine that, you know, you don't end up winning state championships without them contributing to the team culture and chemistry?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a lot of our sophomore class as a whole, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
absolutely. We had
the
about,
young guys buying in. You
yeah.
mentioned it a couple times.
Exactly. So, like, you know, Trent Gottling or Jaden Sharper and those guys, you know, I think that class is like 7 or 8 kids. But they – no, like I said, no one was disappointed because they didn't play on game night. And that's why we were able to achieve what we did, is because our practices were such a high level. And we were probably the deepest team we've been this year. And everyone pushed each other day in and day out. And we continued to get better because of that. So it was pretty cool to see that at the high school level, because, you know, sometimes people could be selfish. Players could be selfish at the high school level because just the maturity thing, you know what I mean? You know, at
Absolutely.
The college level, you see more of that buy-in. And I think, like I said earlier, I think this team reminded me of a college-esque closeness in team and the unselfishness of it, which was awesome to see as a coach.
Absolutely. And as we get close to closing out here, I do have just a couple more questions. I won't take up too much more of your time. But
yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask about here was, you know, down the stretch as you zoom in on kind of the playoff run, what was the message to the team as you guys kind of narrow in on, you know, that perfect season and, you know, the emotions of all of that type of stuff start to really weigh in?
Just not becoming complacent. That was, you know, we talked about it a lot. Because in 2019, we were kind of in the same boat, actually. Howard, your alma mater, ended up
yeah.
knocking us off in the region championship that year.
I remember the game well, actually.
Yeah,
was quite a battle.
So we talked about that a lot, and we talked about that year a lot, comparing it to this year, because it was kind of the same boat in the undefeated type situation, and not becoming complacent. And if it wasn't for our leaders, Aiden Casey, Aiden Himes, and Brady, you know, that's the first thing they talked about once, like, this region came out and stuff like that, is like, hey, guys, we're 0-0. It doesn't matter what we've accomplished this far, because if we don't finish the deal, we don't seal the deal and win this thing, nobody's going to remember what your record was in the regular season. So it was kind of our senior leadership that you know, that followed up what we were trying to express and talk about, the complacency that really got us over the hump, I think.
Absolutely. 20-0 sounds a lot sweeter than 18-1 or 19-1. It certainly
yeah, exactly right.
And so I guess to zoom in on kind of that final game, Broadneck had won it the previous year, you know, has a team that has a ton of commitments. What was the message to your team headed into, you know, that night?
Just to play our style, you know, we thought, you know, they've knocked us out the last 2 years. We scrimmaged them every year early on in the season. So, you know, Broadneck knows us well. We know Broadneck well. And, you know, going into the game, I really thought this year, you know, that the one area where they had us at was the faceoff X, which I was nervous about, but at all other areas we felt good about going into the game. So we just wanted to play our game, both offensively and defensively, and, you know, and try to neutralize, you know, Graham Hartman, who's a stud faceoff guy, and win the 50-50s when our guy makes it a 50-50. And if we did those things, we thought we had a really good shot to win. And the game kind of played out how I thought it would play out in my head, in terms of, you know, the tempo of the game and all that stuff. So, and the kids just kept on fighting. And there was never one point in the game I felt like our kids were like too stressed or the situation was too big for him. They just kept playing four quarters, and whatever happened happened. I felt like, and I think that's why, you know, we kind of took over the game and, you know, in the second half a little bit, and things kind of went our way. So, but we felt good about it going in that you know, we were a better team if not equal to them, and we could win the game. Unlike previous
Absolutely.
Years, we thought maybe we were a little undermatched going in the game, and we had to play our absolute best to beat them, and they maybe don't play their best game if we want to win the game.
Absolutely. And congrats to you guys for getting that done and knocking them off after two in a row, and one of those was an overtime battle. So certainly a sweet way to cap off the 20-0 season. I really appreciate your time. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, it's all good. I appreciate you covering it and all that you do for the sport of lacrosse, you know, not just locally, but, you know, nationally, because, you know, I see you on Twitter and all the social medias, and you do a tremendous job, and Inside Lacrosse does a tremendous job. So it's awesome for the kids.
Thank you, Coach. I really appreciate that, and I will let you get right back to your day. And like I said, really, really appreciate the support and appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks so much.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast, the source of the sport.